You're listening to Toronto's number one real estate podcast, powered by Watson Estates. The most successful local real estate investing starts right here, right now. Here's your host, broker, investor, and social media influencer, Bradley Watson.
Morning, investors. Bradley here from Watson Estates, and you're listening to the largest, fastest growing podcast for Toronto real estate on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Is Toronto in for a rude awakening? And if so, a rude awakening to what exactly? We're going to get into some articles today, get to a better feel for what's going on in our market. As a broker investor myself, I like to keep track of these things, and I thought, why not make friends and share it with friends like you? At the same time, I thought, you know what? I'll show you why you're better to own than to rent. We're going to go through an article that talks about that, but also why condos are a terrible investment. Stuff that you love to hear from your local realtor. And we're going to do that by doing a little bit of math, which gives me flashbacks to my high school math teacher walking in with graph paper. And that kind of weird look on his face, my goodness, he was definitely plotting something. But we like to have some fun in the show. If you haven't already, please hit that like button. Please subscribe to our show. And you can join us, share the show. I mean, the more engagements we get, it helps get the word out there and inform and educate local investors such as yourself. You can share us at Watson Estates. Tag us as well as you're putting this video or podcast out. But love, sending love out to you guys, and welcome to October. I hope you guys are having a fantastic year so far. A little bit more to go, but I know I'm personally enjoying some of the changes of the weather, the climate. This is a good temperature for me, and we're actually going apple picking later today, so really excited about that. But let's get right into it, folks. We're going to talk about a rude awakening that awaits me, you, and all of those around us. Toronto's high-risk housing market could be in for a rude awakening. That's as per BlogTO's article today. They really dive into a report that's come out from our friends over at the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation. And here's what the article says. Toronto's red-hot real estate market could be in trouble, according to the housing market assessment report from the CMHC that points to a growing imbalance between national home prices and income. They love to do these reports, keep us up to date with where there are risks, is there overheating, is there overpricing, what does that look like? You can get all the full details if you go to the report, but we're just going to go to the highlights here. But to kind of set the tone, let's give a little bit of a history lesson on CMHC and their ability to predict our housing market over the last few years. For those of you who've been following our show, you already know where this is headed. In 2020, the CMHC was notoriously negative about the market, laughably negative as we sat back and watched prices climb to excessive levels. Now, it was kind of earlier this year that they kind of threw in the towel, it seemed, and said, you know what, there's a lot of opportunity for growth and price growth, even in places like Toronto. Maybe it's not so bad after all, and they joined the party. Well, guess who's become negative once again? The CMHC. We're going to talk about some of the factors as to why they have and why what I kind of think is going to happen, but we really want to talk about this rude awakening that we're in for, according to the CMHC. The GTA market, they say, is experiencing a continuation of conditions seen for the past several months, the ones we've been tracking here on Toronto's number one real estate podcast, but something has changed, with moderate overheating now added to an already unstable situation and furthering the risk of a potential market downturn. We're reaching the apex, the climax, the plateau that's going to lead to the behemoth of a drop. I don't think the behemoth is the biggest ride anymore. Comment if you know what it is. I can't remember. I was at Wonderland we didn't hit the roller coasters. Once you got little babies, you don't get that fun anymore. We spent a lot of time in Snoopy's section of Wonderland. But anyways, moving on. Stay on task here. So moderate overheating is now being added. That's the first question that I have. Wait a minute. Have we not been experiencing overheating for like a year or more? It's not something we've been dealing with the last few months. It's not something that's changed since the last report CMHC has had till today. So I find it very silly to think that things are kind of changing, or in the last few months we've noticed anything different. If anything, when we look at the stats and we look at the number of sales, from a very high level, and we'll break down why this is not accurate, from a very high level, it seems things are calming down. Most of the media is talking about this cool down that's happening across the country, coast to coast. But I want to know what the reasons are that they give. What exactly has changed that has led to the last few months being more negative of an outlook than we saw earlier this year? Here's what they say. Factors including historically low interest rates. Interest rates have slightly climbed in the last little bit. Not interest rates from the from the Bank of Canada, but rates as far as lending rates if you're going to bank to qualify for a mortgage. So that dropping in rates happened a long time ago, during the same time that CMHC said prices were going to drop. The other thing they say is government supports fueled a market boom after the rollout of mass vaccination programs. So all the money that's been spent by the government. Correction, the majority of the money that was spent by the government was last year as well. So these things haven't changed. I think they're kind of a weak argument. And maybe there's a little bit of flip-flopping happening from CMHC. Makes me wonder how much of this is authentic and how much is kind of peer-driven or pressured, depending on where they're getting their sources. Now, I haven't dove deep into it. All I can tell you is that the CMHC has a very bad track record of predicting where the market is headed. But what has changed from 2020? One of the things that Bob Dugan, the CMHC's chief economist, says, which I think is reasonable, but I also kind of points to what I think is their real reason, the actual reason that they've changed their thoughts. Here's what he says. Exceptionally strong demand and home price appreciation through the course of the pandemic may have contributed to increased expectations of continued price growth for home buyers in several local housing markets across Ontario and Eastern Canada. This, in turn, may have caused more buyers to enter the market than was warranted. There's a word for that, an acronym of sorts. FOMO, fear of missing out. The CMHC, there it is, with everything except for using the terminology. He literally hits us with the definition of FOMO, saying the market is now kind of reached a point of overheating because, let's face it, when everyone expected, not everyone, but many expected prices to come down, it didn't. So therefore, in a decent time, why would it not continue? People jumping in illogically, psychologically, excited about markets continuing to forever climb, FOMO. But I don't believe this is just FOMO. And I think the jump on the FOMO wagon is maybe the reason that there's been such fluctuations in their predictions. I think there's far, far more. By the end of this podcast, you'll have heard a few of the reasons why we believe there is things to watch out for, but also the direction that we feel the market is going to go. I'm leaving a little bit vague here, but here's what they say. This article does get one thing correct, and it's that it's not over yet. So when we're saying watch out, pay attention, you don't know what's about to hit you. Something's about to hit you, but the article comes off at this angle of it's about to hit you with a crash, a vulnerability, an overheating, as per CMHC. But they end up leading to the same conclusion, which I find is quite funny. The GTA market is just as vulnerable as it was 6 months ago, they say. Despite the easing of excessive home sales after the pandemic bounce back months, there is still a hefty imbalance between demand and supply, pushing home prices ever higher. So the article that starts off talking about these things you got to watch out for ends with the same conclusion. Despite all the things the CMHC say, it's about to get a whole lot worse in the way of prices increasing because of this imbalance of supply and demand. CMHC holds the title for the most negative outlook in 2020. Absolutely laughable, yet somehow here we are landing in the same boat as them. Supply and demand indicates higher prices are to come. And a lot of people don't like to hear prices are going to keep going up. Because let's face it, when it's already impossible to buy a detached home in Toronto as a first-time home buyer, knowing it's going to get worse just sucks. Does it not? I think that sucks. People are stuck. We're going to talk about how I think that's impacting everything, but also something that maybe some food for thought. We're going to leave you with a bit of food for thought. Today's a good episode. We're having a lot of fun today. Give me some golden nuggets to think about, some gum to chew on. But here's my thoughts on the coming winter market. Early spring 2022 is possible. We have this very common theme when we look through the last 20, 30 years with a few blips here and there. But we see that the market picks up in March, April, May, and May is kind of that high peak price month. Well, last year, because of lockdowns or people just feeling wanting to get out, they wanted to do their shopping. They wanted to get that spring housing shopping done early. So what did they do? They decided to go look at places in January, February, one of the safest things you could be doing in the middle of a lockdown if there was even anything else to do at all. So Is it possible that we could have an early spring? I think those sales numbers are trending downwards. They're slowing down in the speed. And we're not going to get into too many of the stats from September. I'm going to leave that for the next episode so you guys can tune in for that. Today, I want to give you guys some teasers and some more food for thought, things to think about as we kind of look to where the market is headed. But when we're looking at the next spring coming up, is it impossible that January, February, and early spring once again be the kind of catalyst, this trigger that we experience? Something tells me, and I can't put my finger on it, but I suspect just based on the coolness and the quiet and the prices that are secretly rising in the backdrop here, we could find ourselves in another unusual year with an early spring. If it happens, quote me on it. If it doesn't happen, well, we'll talk about how we didn't ever really said that anyways. I try and be authentic. I try and be honest with you guys. I'm saying it's possible. I'm not saying it's going to happen. Maybe it's 50-50 at this point. I think there's this rising of prices happening in the back end that people are ignoring with this illusion that sales are declining and therefore we're safe. I think people are going to get a rude awakening, and it's not going to take until February, late February, early March to realize that. But anyways, be ready to move quickly. That's the moral of the story that I'm sharing with my clients, is as we kind of look to get ready for the spring, which a lot of people are kind of winding down for the holidays and they're thinking, okay, what are we going to do next? My next move is going to be the spring. My advice is, if possible, be ready to pull that trigger a lot earlier. Be in a position to move quickly. Us, our brokerage, and our team, we're pretty fast at getting those things on the market. But obviously, there's inconveniences of listing a property. So get ready. Get ready now. Spring cleaning is coming early this year, potentially. So the more numbers we see, though, the clearer things will become. It's why all math teachers wear glasses, because it improves division. All right, moving on. Let's get into Globe and Mail. In Toronto area, lack of product drives buyer mania. Buyer mania. We're going to talk about this balance, this imbalance between supply and demand, and how that's playing out in our market around us. I think this balance of supply and demand is becoming the bigger story in a lot of ways, at least in my mind, than affordability. Affordability is old news. It's unaffordable. It's been unaffordable forever. But supply and demand is something that we can still maybe have a hope of solving. There's this constant chase during the election, and as we listen to some of the boards and, you know, in the real estate industry, there's a fighting on the front of supply and demand. I think the affordability thing is all but set sailed. But this is what the article says. The listings drought in Toronto area real estate is creating a strange dynamic. Buyers are paying desperate and unheard of prices in some pockets and stoically waiting on the sidelines in others. Very few pockets where things are sitting quiet. But I thought this example gives an illustration of just how crazy our market has become. And one of the things I want to pay attention to that's not mentioned in this article is just how hard we work to protect the interests of the seller in our industry. They should be able to market their property however they want. If they want to hold blind offers, they should be allowed to do it. It's their property. You should not get involved in how the seller. We got to protect the interests of the seller. They're the one selling the home after all. Where's the protection for the buyer? And you're going to see buyers are pulling at straws to grab any level of support, any level of success in a market where it is virtually impossible to get anywhere. Here we go. On Cherry Bell Road in Mississauga, one vintage three-bedroom bungalow drew 53 bids after it arrived in the market in mid-September. The listing clearly spelled out the seller wouldn't look at bully offers before the scheduled date, but people called and asked about submitting them anyways. There you go. Straw number one. Can I get in there quicker, please? Please. We don't see bully offers as much in a market like this. They're a lot more rare. People recognize just how powerful it is to wait until presentation day. And good agents are advising their clients accordingly. But here we go. Listen to this. Ramping it up a little bit. Other potential buyers asked for her being Janelle Cameron, the RE/MAX Hallmark Realty listing agent, for her figuring that as the listing agent, she would have an inside track in bidding. Maybe if I can have that agent represent me, that would be my opportunity to get around it. And not only that, some offered to give her money under the table. Woo-hoo! How often is this happening and we don't know about it? I mean, this one's in the media. The fact that it is being offered out there makes you wonder on how many are actually successful. And I hope our real estate industry is a little more sensible than that. There's enough money, I believe, in one of these transactions that you don't need to grab some under the table, especially when you should be working in the interest of your selling client. But all of these things are just showing you how desperate buyers are to get the one up. If this was an open bid scenario, would these things happen? No. Transparency and opportunity to see what everyone else is offering, not necessarily having any interest, because if there is a benefit to one client over another, namely, I'm taking some commission off because I'm representing the buyer and therefore I need to let the other buyers know, these things are all out on the table. There's no way to hide it. There's no way to hide it. And the other argument a lot of boards have about this blind bidding, and I don't want to go too far off on a tangent here, is when we look at places like Australia, it's a disaster. Not only the accents are a little bit wild and it kind of gives it that vibe, you know. Don't even ask me to do an Australian accent. That's just going to go absolutely down under. But there are websites that are being created where you can do these bids online. This doesn't necessarily need to be face-to-face. We can still protect each other through COVID and have a removal of the blind bidding process, but nobody wants to hear that. Tuning out. After 7 days, the house sold just above $1.4 million for a premium. A premium meaning above what it was worth, not above what it was listed at. A premium of $500,000. I remember when someone said, I have $1 million. That was a big deal. Now, having $1 million buys you a basic house. If that. It's really sad talking to my kids, man. I really feel for the next generation. But here we are. Here we are with a giant imbalance of supply and demand right now. Why? Why do we have an imbalance of supply and demand? I'm going to give you some of the reasons, and I think it all comes off of this one concept. The issue that we're experiencing, the worst penalty for, is for move-in buyers and first-time home buyers. They traditionally will start the cycle of real estate. They'll buy the condo guys will move up into a townhouse or a semi or however fast you want to climb. But that first sale is what leads the confidence to go and purchase the next property, to the point where people would have it conditional on the sale of their home once upon a long time ago. But if you don't have that starting point, this is exactly what happens. This is exactly what happens. But why are they not moving? We need to be able to address those issues. And if we can get them moving, this transfer of properties from one to the next, the first purchase to move people forward, then we find ourselves in a position where there's a steady flow. An increase, a higher number of sales is not necessarily a bad thing. It creates jobs and it means movement of people and of opening of housing for others. Well, the reason I believe that we have this issue for first-time home buyers and for move-up buyers, and I say move-up buyers meaning you already have a property, but you actually can't move to the next one. Even if you sold it, you can't move to the next property, which should be that's a problem, especially when interest rates are as low as they are today. Well, here's some of the reasons. One, prices are so freaking high. Prices are high. But where that also plays out is the CMHC stress test, I believe, is single-handedly making this the most difficult transition for first-time home buyers and for move-up buyers alike. The stress test has become a nightmare. And an interest rate where you can get mid-2s, in some cases below 2%, you are qualifying at a 5% rate with obviously massive down payment requirements on top of that, and massive requirements for your total debt service ratio. So, and the total debt service ratio comes back to the stress test amount, not to your loan amount. From the residential standpoint, this has become a nightmare for people as prices have gone up. And the cost of moving is high. It's so high these days, right? These expenses, land transfer tax, all of these things, not that they've necessarily changed, but you add it to the overall and it's far difficult. Plus, it's too risky to move. Where am I going to go? It makes sense for me to sell and then buy. And I know there's brokerages out there that help you with that transition. I've had people comment that as well. But it's too risky, generally speaking, for me to sell without purchasing. But it's also legally way risky for me to buy without selling, as we've seen back in 2017. So people freeze. They don't need to go anywhere. Generally speaking, we all have housing. Everyone's kind of placed. So unless there's a reason for me to move, unless you give me an opportunity to move, I'm not going to, and therefore we're going to stay still. Nothing's going to move. First-time home buyers aren't going to buy, and you're not going to be able to move up. And the housing market stays quiet. Sales go down. And here we are, October 1st, 2021. So this is what we're seeing. We're seeing sales dropping. The article continues. Rishi Sondhi, economist of TD Bank, notes that sales in August edged down for the fifth straight month, but the dip was the smallest of the monthly declines. These are declining through the fall, guys. That's something that's also interesting. We're obviously going to hit, that's through August. So once we hit September, there might be another bump. I think that's kind of expected. But it's interesting to see that we have this steady decline in the number of sales. Since hitting their peak in March, sales are down 28% nationally. That kills real estate brokerages, real estate agents, because obviously less sales means less revenue for those businesses as well. Mr. Sodhi adds that housing markets across Canada have been tighter than expected in the third quarter. This suggests prices could continue to rise in the near term. When we looked across CREA, our last couple episodes ago, we saw they expected sales to come down, prices to come down. We saw sales come down, prices go up. So we're on track to see, because of the supply and demand, those sales are down. The number of active listings are declining faster, and the prices are therefore rising. All of these things. So here's an interesting question for you guys. I'll pose it to you and then answer it to me. If move-up buyers and first-time home buyers are stuck, shouldn't that mean prices will come down? So if unaffordable, nobody's buying them. That only makes sense. Well, you'd hope so. First of all, you would hope so. But there's a big wrench in that thinking that I think we're going to start to see play out. You're so lucky if you're sitting on this podcast, because I don't know if we're going to talk about this a whole lot, but I think it's an amazing concept. It's an amazing thought. Think about it like this, guys. Baby boomers. How old are they? 57 to 75. Don't hurt your brain. There is a massive wealth transfer that's happened between poor to rich during the high inflationary period we experienced through hard assets. People that own properties have done really well. But there's also coming and already starting, I believe, a massive transfer of wealth between boomers down to millennials. I personally believe it's going to skip a generation, go right to those who need help with affordability. That is our generation, my generation, the millennials, and maybe the one below or the bottom end of the millennials. We'll see. But those who need the money now. But we obviously have different players. We have people that have massive wealth. We have those who are chronic renters for the last several decades. So there's going to become this continued divide. But for those who have older generations, baby boomers with wealth passing to their kids, who hopefully don't recklessly spend it, though I think many will do that too, there's going to be an influx of money. And so if that is the case, knowing the baby boomers at the top end are 75 years old, I believe that with that transfer of wealth and therefore purchases and picking up the housing where they left off that we haven't been able to experience for the last 5-10 years, we're going to see that those who move first wins. That's my kind of hypothesis to that whole thing. We'll see how that all plays out, because we're going to see this massive growth in prices that I was like, where is this coming from? It's not just this, my parents lent me 10% to buy a property. It's my grandma just bought me a mansion. Thank you, grandma. And so those that are able to identify that trend and move quicker, I think will be ahead. Despite the price of real estate being excessive in Canada, millennials are smart. They know the gravy train has lots of track left. We're trying to convince young people that renting is better, but it's simply not true. That's my thought. And there's, I guess to back it up, I told you today, I was going to explain why owning is better than renting. And a lot of it comes from a few weeks ago. BlogTO had an article I thought was pretty good, worth sharing. Owning a home in Canada costs way less per month than renting. This was a Royal LePage new study, which examined hundreds of different scenarios of homeowners versus non, and found that 91% of the time, people who are lucky enough and able to scrounge a down payment of at least 20% have way lower home-related monthly expenses than tenants do. That is if a mortgage payment is looked at as a savings. Your equity portion, your equity pay down within that mortgage is considered a saving. You actually will be ahead. When you make a rental payment, all of it goes to the landlord, but it's a full cost. All of it is gone. Versus when you're putting it into a mortgage, at least a portion of it remains. They say, to the point where even if the cost of your home doesn't appreciate over time, even if home prices decline by 10%, half of owners would see a positive rate of return on their investment. So even if the market were to crumble by 10%, they'd still be ahead by an average of $769 per month for equivalent dwellings. But I would look at this report, just kind of from a high level here, as a freehold experiment, not a condo experiment. It appears that things like maintenance fees for condo owners, which can be higher than $769, are not considered in that report. Which brings me to looking at condos as an investment. Da, da, da. Guys, condos are a much riskier investment from a cash flow perspective. I throw this number around. You need 40 to 50% down payment in order to even get a positive cash flow in condos these days. a little bit too recklessly. I've got some viewers that have asked for me to show that. Thank you, Yan Shen, for your comment, as well, DH, for your comment. For your 50% down payment to make rental condos cash flow positive, what would be a numbers example of that? Or have you done a show that reflects the numbers side of this? That was from, he says his name's Michael. Okay, thank you, Michael. No, I have not done a show where I break that down. I've done a long time ago talking about the moment that we are no longer cash flow positive, but I think this is a good platform for me to actually share some real numbers. Today, while constipated, I decided to solve this problem, this math problem. I was able to work it out with a pencil. The math problem. Work a math problem with a pencil. Awkward. All right. Let's look at an investment. So I wanted to look at one bedroom condos. I found, and we won't get into the math on this, but I found one bedroom condos tend to be the best cash cow, the best cash flow out of all the condos. The simple way to look at it is for every dollar increase on the price between a one bedroom to a one and den or to a two bedroom, you don't see the same percentage increase in the number of rent. So therefore I have found, we're going to leave this. We're not going to go down on this rabbit hole, that one bedrooms tend to be the better investment out of the bunch. Well, I thought, well, let's find a condo, a live condo, live example for you today as of October 1st, 2021. Here is a promotion for 70 Distillery Lane East, unit 3604, which is under 300 or 600 square feet. It has a list price of $620,000, just under that. And I would say it's a good promotion for this listing until you read the description and as to why I picked it as our example today. Here's what they say. Top five reasons you will love this condo. Number one, beautiful unit with one bedroom, a four-piece bathroom, a balcony, and a spacious open concept living area. Number two, I'm not going through the whole five, but number two, an incredible investment with many building amenities such as a concierge and a rooftop deck. This, my friends, is a good investment. Well, let's see. Let's see. What is the average rent for Toronto? Let's start with that. Let's start with the revenue side, guys. Right now, as we look, I saw a Globe and Mail article talking about Toronto. They expect the average rent is up 7.2%, which is a plus, but it sits still below $2,000. So we're going to be generous today. Our Distillery District friend, they just rented it out immediately and they're getting $2,200. Cha-ching. Plus the tenants paying the utilities. Not a bad little setup. So I ran some of the numbers, just a general insurance calculation, $150 a month. Taxes for the property, $210. Condo fees, $529. Again, not too bad. Total expenses, $890. So based on our $2,200 minus $890, therefore, our mortgage payment needs to be under $1,310 if we wanted the cash flow, right? So I ran the numbers, looking at a 2.5% interest rate. Obviously, these things can bump up and down. 20% down, you're putting $124,000 in. You're paying $2,200 a month. You're out. 30%, you're still paying $1,940 a month, you're out. 40%, $1,662 mortgage payments, you are out. Even at 50% down, $310,000 down payment, a mortgage of 2.5%, your payments are $1,385. You're still a negative cash flow. 50% down, $310,000. You need a whopping 53% down. That's $328,600. At a 2.5% interest rate, that's $1,302. You're making a whopping $8 a month if you put that much money on. What's $8 divided by $328,000? A bad investment. That's what that is. Oh, and you have to do it without refinancing your property, because we know if you're refinancing your property, that's pretty much 100% finance. And therefore, all of this math that we just did, you're still losing money. You're just paying interest on a different property. You still suck. With that money, why not? And I'm talking the $328,000. Why not buy a $1.6 million apartment building? That definitely cash flows. That's what we're doing. DM me if you want to get involved in all of that. If you got that kind of money, that's what you should be doing. No stress test. But yet, an investment. This is a good investment. It has a concierge. Not bad. I mean, but what do I know? What do I know? I mean, I failed math so many times at school, I can't even count. There you have it. There you have it. Hope you guys learned some stuff today, a little bit about a market, some food for thought, some calculations on why you should own versus rent, but also why maybe you should reconsider if you're thinking about buying a condo as an investment. I think there's a lot more options for you out there. As a broker investor, I like to know what's going on in our market. We're going to continue to have fantastic guests. I really appreciate the love and support you guys have given us. Support the channel. Hit the like button, comment, leave me a review, tag us at Watson Estates on Instagram, and I'll see you guys next time. Take care and keep it real.